This is a very big waste of my time, Alaskan constituents' time, time in the building, staff time.
Congresswoman Mary Peltola calls for more action and less talk. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 2nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, not everybody's on board with the Fairbanks Utilities deal to source North Slope natural gas.
No, I don't think it makes sense at all. Why would you have someone controlling the entire value chain from gas supply to liquefaction?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you an Alaska artist or do you know one? March 1st is the deadline to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Award. The program provides awards to artists, musicians, performers, writers, and culture bearers. Amounts are increasing. A project award, now $10,000, is available for an Alaska artist at any career stage. Mid-career and established artists may apply for a $25,000 artist fellowship. Learn more at Rasmussen.org. Rasmussen Foundation, promoting a better life for all Alaskans. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
Alaska's Senate Education Committee has introduced a bill to increase per-student state funding by $1,000. That would bring the base student allocation, or BSA, to $6,960, and it would be the highest one-year increase ever. Teachers, school administrators, and elected officials spoke in favor of more education funding at a Senate Education Committee meeting yesterday. Juno music teacher Mike Busey said increasing the BSA would help reduce out-migration from the state.
Underfunded schools are a major factor driving away young, skilled, and professional families. Families who would love to contribute to the growth of our state's economy, but are not willing to sacrifice their children in a subpar educational system.
Fairbanks teacher Thomas Kennedy said it would help reduce staff turnover.
The morale of the young teachers, a lot of them that are single wage earners just getting started, are so low that they're the lowest that I've seen in all my years of teaching.
Two speakers opposed a funding increase, saying changes to curriculum or expanded access to private schools would be better ways to improve student outcomes. But multiple teachers said inadequate funding hurts student performance by leading to bigger class sizes and high staff turnover rates. Jessica Paris, a former teacher in Juneau, said she had the strongest relationships with her smaller classes.
Each got more talking time, more performance time, more comfort with their peers, more chance to shine or get individual attention and instruction, and more feedback on their writing. And I also knew them better, and so was able to pick up when I had a freshman who was initiating marijuana use and another who was abusing alcohol.
Last session's Alaska Reads Act included a $30 increase starting in July of 2023, but many district leaders say it's not enough to keep up with rising costs. The committee will hear additional public comments about the BSA next Wednesday. School bus drivers on strike in the Matanuska-Susitna borough are headed back to the bargaining table tomorrow. The decision comes a day after bus drivers packed a school board meeting, blasting their employer over safety issues and asking board members to intervene. Bus drivers walked off the job on Tuesday after dropping children off at school, sending student transportation into a tailspin. Alice Smith was among the bus drivers who testified to the school board.
This bus company does not care about the safety of these children as much as we bus drivers do. That is our job. It's our livelihood.
The bus company is Durham Bus Services. The company and the union representing the bus drivers have so far failed to come to a contract agreement. Schools remain open as the strike continues and families must take their children to school. At last night's MATSU board meeting, Smith and other drivers spoke of equipment failures and other issues. Smith says Durham's buses do not have external speakers, which are crucial when cars speed by during bus stops.
Outside of that bus, there is no speaker to scream at these kids, stop, because this guy ain't going to stop for you. All right, I could not deal with somebody's maiming or death on my conscience. It'd be the end of me because these students, as I said, are as my children and their precious cargo.
Other drivers told the board that some Durham buses have bad windshield wipers that leave blind spots, broken heaters that leave students cold, and wheelchair lift alarms that keep sounding after a lift cycle. Later during the meeting, District Superintendent Randy Traney acknowledged the strike's effects and urged both sides to end it quickly.
And I think everybody in the room would agree that strikes are not good for students or their families or for the people involved. And that's why we're doing all we can to encourage a quick and expedient solution to this problem and ratify a fair and equitable contract.
Union officials say talks with Durham will resume at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Well, just 1 month into the new Congress, Representative Mary Peltola has had enough of political bickering. Alaska's lone member of the U.S. House told reporters today that the House has done little more than welcome new members and organize its committees. Peltola has pledged to carry on the legacy of her predecessor, Don Young. In many ways, she is following in his footsteps, but her approach when she's frustrated is entirely different. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Peltola says she's happy with her committee assignments, resources and transportation, Young's old stomping grounds. But so far, she says the House hasn't done much.
We're spending a lot of time on things like non-binding resolutions, voting against the horrors of socialism, and people like me wringing my hands on which way do I go on this. And this is a very big waste of my time, Alaskan constituents' time, time in the building, staff time.
This week, Peltola was at the House Resources Committee when a routine meeting became heated. The topic? Guns. Democratic Congressman Jared Huffman of California proposed to reinstate a rule barring members from bringing firearms to the committee room.
How many members feel like they would need to carry a weapon?
It's the gentleman's time.
How many members feel like they would need to carry a weapon into our committee hearings? Got one?
I feel I need one everywhere here.
That's Colorado Republican Lauren Boebert, who has made gun-toting a key part of her identity.
There
everywhere?
Is, oftentimes we are sure. harassed in the hallways. We walk alone.
The gentleman hasn't yielded.
And just and would those be loaded weapons, presumably?
Not an unloaded weapon.
Okay.
It
that's
got bizarre,
know.
With one member challenging another to name the, quote, homicidal maniacs on the committee. Eventually, the committee voted 25-14 not to impose a weapons ban. Peltola's vote? She didn't. She says she chose to leave the room when Boebert put up a big poster board of Huffman wearing a tinfoil hat.
I just thought, okay, this has devolved to a place where I have better uses of my time. And I recognized that those amendments were not going to pass. It turned into a very shrill conversation a number of times, very high-pitched emotionalism. And not problem solving.
Peltola had another committee meeting to attend. She had constituents waiting to talk to her. Lawmakers often complain about proceedings that waste their time, but choosing to withdraw from the field rather than engage in rhetorical battle, this is a very different Congress member than the one Alaskans had before. Because Don Young was a brawler, especially when frustrated. His arena was often the very same House Resources Committee. Consider this exchange Young had with a hearing witness over drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge.
Well, okay, I know you went to Yuba College.
I'll call you anything I want to call you sitting in that chair. You
pardon?
Say, you just be quiet.
Well, but
you
why?
You be quiet.
That was 2011. This is 2023, and Peltola says she sees no point in engaging with nonsense. Guns are a tricky area for her. She owns them, grew up with them, and says they're a core tool of Alaska subsistence lifestyles. Still, she supports things like secure storage laws, waiting periods, and universal background checks, which doesn't pass muster with the gun lobby. Peltola is not saying how she would have voted on a gun ban for the Resources Committee because she says she doesn't think it was a legitimate effort.
And it's a lot of grandstanding and posturing and quote-unquote playing to your base.
As for the vote on the House floor denouncing the horrors of socialism, it put Democrats like Peltola in a quandary. It was meant to embarrass the left. Some said it was poorly drafted. All forms of socialism? What about Social Security and Medicare? It's easy to denounce murderous, authoritarian socialism, but what about the center-left parties in ally countries like Canada and Norway? To Peltola, the resolution was just partisan messaging. And she can cite instances of grandstanding from Democrats, too. To an extent, her complaint is what you'd expect from a minority member. Nothing is getting done, just meaningless resolutions. To members of the majority, the House Republicans, the messages matter. Here's Texas Republican Jody Arrington on the House floor defending the resolution.
And if, like my colleagues say, that this is just theater, that decrying socialism, extolling the freedom and the virtues and value of freedom is theater, God give us more Shakespeare's. God bless America, and I yield back.
Peltola was among 109 Democrats who voted for the Republican resolution. She says it was a no-win situation. But as she sees it, it wasn't worth fighting over. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Meanwhile, Congresswoman Peltola has chosen a former rival and a Republican for a key staff job in her office. That's state director. Josh Rivak is a military veteran and was a state senator from Anchorage when he filed to run for the U.S. House after Congressman Don Young died. Rivak had the endorsement of Young's widow but finished 10th in the crowded special primary. Peltola said in an emailed announcement that Rivak's skills will be useful to constituents who need help navigating the federal bureaucracy. She said Rivak will be the first point of contact for Alaskans who are seeking assistance with federal agencies or casework. The announcement quotes Rivak saying that he and Peltola are of different parties, but the job is about helping Alaskans. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Alaska State Troopers now have a plan for body-worn cameras.
We view them as a very valuable tool in modern-day policing, and it's been something that the public has brought up.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The future looks bright because the University of Alaska is on a mission to empower Alaska. From drone piloting to vital climate research to critical mining solutions, the University of Alaska's three universities and their community campuses shape the jobs and careers that fuel the economy, creating a more empowered Alaska for all. Learn more at empower.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska.
The Alaska Department of Public Safety has released a draft of its policy for state troopers to wear body-worn cameras, and it's seeking public input on the proposal. Public safety spokesman Austin McDaniel says the department has been pushing for body cameras for troopers for several years. And in 2022, the state approved spending just over $3.5 million to get cameras on state and wildlife troopers, deputy fire marshals, and village public safety officers.
We view them as a very valuable tool in modern-day policing, and it's been something that the public has brought up pretty regularly over the last several years.
The 7-page draft policy covers everything from when troopers should turn the cameras on to how and when the footage will be released. McDaniel says under regular circumstances, the public can ask for footage through a public records request once an investigation or court proceeding has concluded.
If we have something that's actively working its way through the Alaska court system or the federal court system, we as the Department of Public Safety really have a responsibility to protect a defendant's right to a fair trial.
But he says in incidents like an in-custody death or an officer-involved shooting, the policy allows for the department to release body camera footage to the public before an investigation wraps up.
We do plan to proactively release body-worn camera video footage, personal audio recordings, or dash cam video associated with these critical events once those primary criminal interviews have been completed with all the involved parties.
McDaniel says the Department of Law has reviewed the draft policy. The public can submit comments on the policy from February 8th to March 1st. After comments are taken into account, McDaniel says the state plans to begin a pilot program in the spring to outfit troopers with the cameras. Meanwhile, in Anchorage, the state's largest police department is set to enter arbitration with the local police union this spring after failing to enact a body camera policy almost 2 years after voters approved the purchase and implementation of the cameras. Music. Earlier this month, Fairbanks's only natural gas supplier signed a 20-year contract with Hilcorp to begin sourcing gas from the North Slope. It's a historic deal, the first time North Slope gas will be commercialized for use elsewhere in the state, and in this case, in a region heavily dependent on expensive heating oil. But some Fairbanks residents and utility experts are concerned the deal could backfire. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
Interior Gas Utility is a relatively small business. It's a public corporation owned by the Fairbanks North Star Borough, with about 2,000 customers and a network of gas storage tanks and pipelines that crisscross Fairbanks and North Pole. For borough residents, locking down an affordable, stable source of heating fuel is a central issue.
The whole Fairbanks area is hurting for, you know, some kind of reasonable energy costs so we can live and grow economically in every other way.
That's former IGU board member Patrice Lee. Natural gas is, generally speaking, cheaper than heating oil and cleaner than burning wood, coal, or diesel. But Lee and others have concerns about how this latest deal to source North Slope gas was made and how it affects borough residents. For years, IGU has purchased natural gas from Hilcorp operations in Cook Inlet. They process it at an IGU-owned liquefaction plant at Point McKenzie and truck the liquid gas north more than 300 miles up the park's highway to the interior. 2 weeks ago, IGU signed another contract with Hilcorp, this one to bring gas south from Hilcorp's Prudhoe Bay oil fields. Here's Lee again.
That's going to be their footprint for any and other all businesses up there that need gas. And that's all good and fine, but many of us feel that we could have found the amount of gas we need for less.
IGU spokesperson Elena Seddeth says the company started looking for new sources of natural gas last year after Hilcorp made an announcement warning utilities about uncertain gas supplies in Cook Inlet.
And we are already set to transport LNG from somewhere, and we are closer to the North Slope than any of the other utilities that source natural gas.
Eventually, IGU and Hilcorp came to an agreement to purchase North Slope gas under a plan that involves a Hilcorp-affiliated company called Harvest Midstream, building a liquefaction plant near Deadhorse. Then IGU plans to truck the gas 500 miles to Fairbanks down the Dalton Highway. Harvest and Hilcorp both say that they are pleased to supply North Slope gas to the interior, but neither would comment further for this story. Critics see several issues with this plan. One is IGU's selection of a Hilcorp-aligned company like Harvest to build the liquefaction plant, instead of putting out a call for competitive construction bids.
No, I don't think it makes sense at all. Why would you have someone controlling the entire value chain from gas supply to liquefaction?
Marianne Pease is an energy consultant who helped IGU with sourcing and contracting a few years ago.
You know, if you want to throw out sole source contracts, that's fine. But you have to realize that you may not be getting the optimal benefit for the end user.
IGU General Manager Dan Britton says that while the utility has called out for bids for other projects, they went with Harvest this time because the company has worked on similar projects in the past.
Given their capacity and their ability to get the project constructed in a reasonable time frame, the fact that they have operate assets in the North Slope today.
IGU signed 20-year contracts with Hilcorp and Harvest that they say will offer stability to their customers and a comparable price to what they're paying now. But Pease says that's a long time to be locked in with the same suppliers.
What will happen if other options come online here in the near future where the price is more competitive? You know, what kind of carve-outs do they have if there's other options that materialize?
Pease says the deal is low risk, and that's something utilities tend to look for. But long term, she's not sure it's the best price IGU could have delivered for a region so in need of affordable heating fuel. IGU says plans are already underway to build the North Slope liquefaction plant. It's expected to be online by late 2024. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Time with friends means the world for kids, and the same goes for Kids at Heart. Connecting with friends and loved ones matters because Alaskans are better together. Boost your power to protect yourself and those around you by keeping up to date on all recommended vaccines, including an annual flu shot, or any boosters recommended by your provider. Visit vaccinate.alaska.gov to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A shortage of defense attorneys means the Alaska Public Defender Agency will soon have to stop taking clients in Bethel and Nome who face the most serious criminal charges under state law. That's according to a letter from Agency Chief Samantha Chirot to the presiding judges for the Bethel and Nome Judicial Districts. The letter asks that judges stop assigning unclassified or Class A felony cases to public defenders in state superior court for those districts starting February 13th. Those types of cases include alleged murders, which often involve more complicated, longer-term court battles. The Public Defender Agency is state-funded and tasked with providing legal counsel to defendants who cannot afford their own attorney. It's an important part of the judicial process because defendants are entitled to legal representation under the Constitution, so criminal cases cannot proceed without it. In the letter, Chirot says a lack of experienced public defenders in Nome and Bethel means the agency cannot provide adequate representation in the most serious cases. Chirot says the agency has other qualified attorneys in other areas of the state, but they already have too many cases to take on any additional load. She also notes in the letter that while the current shortage has pushed the agency to its limit in Bethel and Nome, it might have to soon stop taking cases in Palmer District Court too, quote, if expected resources do not materialize in the next few weeks. Whether the state has provided adequate funding for public defenders has been a question for years. According to the Anchorage Daily News, Governor Mike Dunleavy's recent budget proposal includes $3.1 million for the Public Defender Agency and Office of Public Advocacy, in addition to funding promised in previous years to hire more attorneys and to pay higher salaries. A spokesperson for the court system did not respond to a request for comment today. It remains unclear how Bethel and Nome defendants without funds for a private attorney will be represented after February 13th. A CPR class coming to Ketchikan next month is aiming to certify Filipino residents. The Ketchikan Wellness Coalition class aims to ensure residents can help their neighbors or family members in an emergency. That's a skill even more necessary in two of Ketchikan's biggest apartment buildings, where it's difficult or impossible to access a defibrillator. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
The Ketchikan Wellness Coalition is celebrating National Heart Health Month with an upcoming CPR class. Alma Parker leads the coalition's Strengthening Cultural Unity Task Force. She says this class specifically targets Filipino residents who speak multiple languages. If a bilingual person is CPR certified, Parker says they can help others who don't speak English while waiting for first responders in an emergency.
Having bilingual in different dialects would also be ideal because Tagalog is the national language, but there are so many different dialects of those who are from the Philippines, so that would be in the perfect world.
In particular, the coalition wants to see more CPR-certified Filipino people in Ketchikan's biggest apartment buildings, Tongass Towers and Marine View Condominiums. A majority of the residents in both buildings are of Asian descent, according to 2020 census data, and together they're home to about 30% of Ketchikan's Asian American community.
So those are highly dense populations of Filipinos live there, and we felt it was necessary to ensure that there was a CPR-trained resident in the building. So in case there is an emergency, we would be able to find and locate individuals who are CPR-trained. I also don't even know if there's an AED in these buildings as well.
An AED is an automated external defibrillator. It's a device that allows people with just a bit of training to shock someone's heart back into rhythm.
Neither of the two buildings has one, according to Ketchikan Fire Department officials, nor are they required to, but they can make it dramatically more likely that someone survives after their heart stops. For every minute that someone goes without a defibrillator, their chances of survival go down about 10%, according to the Red Cross. Ketchikan Fire Department Chief Rick Hines says CPR is the best way to keep someone alive until there's an AED available.
And it's in hopes of keeping blood circulating, keeping the heart oxygenated and irritated enough that it will stay in that rhythm until an AED can get there or a defibrillator can get there and try to shock them.
Hines says every second counts. Typically, he would expect first responders to make it to one of the buildings from the downtown station in roughly 6 minutes. But that doesn't count the time it takes to get the crew and equipment to the right floor.
Some of the things to factor in is elevator availability, how long it takes to call the elevator, how many stops the elevator makes going up to the floors, and that certainly can make the time to make it to the top floor of that building longer than the time it takes to actually respond to that building.
That's one of the reasons the Wellness Coalition is working to certify more residents. And Parker says a similar CPR class last month yielded promising results.
Last month, our first CPR class was held at the plaza that we recruited and solicited people to come and join the class that were of Filipino descent who specifically spoke Tagalog so we could have some bilingual CPR, fully trained first aid and CPR community members in our lovely town of Ketchikan.
So Parker says it's important that as many people as possible arm themselves with the knowledge to save their neighbors' and family members' lives. The more certified residents, the better.
Having one in a high-rise such as Marine View or Tongass Towers, it would be difficult if, you know, that person's at work or whatnot. So having multiple individuals in those locations being trained would be ideal.
During the last class hosted by the coalition, 8 Filipino residents became CPR certified. 4 of those people also spoke Tagalog. Some were kids, and Parker says she'd like to see more young people in future classes. Parker says she's surprised there aren't AEDs in the two buildings. She says the coalition's health equity programs, like the Sama Sama Tayo program, might be able to help.
It really is something that having AEDs, knowing how to properly use them, is a goal of the Wellness Coalition, and particularly in this grant that we are working under to ensure healthcare access and in our community is equal for everyone.
She says trying to place AEDs in the building is something her organization would consider, but the devices also need upkeep and maintenance. So in the meantime, the coalition is pushing hard to get the life-saving knowledge of CPR into the hands of as many people as possible. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Katie Anastas in Juneau, Chris Clint, Wesley Early, and Kavitha George in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. There are many ways to support your local public media station. Donate now and arrange to make a planned gift as a bequest. Your legacy will stretch from today to many tomorrows. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. Thank you. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.